quantum. And so last time, what were we doing last time? So we were talking about zero-point energy, zero-point energy for this guy. So for a ball rolling around in a bowl like this, there was a zero-point energy. It couldn't just have zero energy. It had to be jiggling around a little bit. And then we talked about some of the implications of that. In particular, we talked about the Casimir effect. So if I have these two plates in a vacuum, remove all the photons, okay, it's pitch black, zero temperature, all that stuff, the plates are not charged, we would expect nothing to happen. But in fact, they attract each other. And we've got that weird factor of minus 1 over 12, right? And what you find is if you use that weird factor of minus 1 over 12, the prediction that it gives for the strength of the force, you get a particular prediction for the strength of the force, and then you measure the strength of the force, and you find that it's exactly that. Okay, so this minus 1 over 12 is in fact correct. Okay, so that weird mathematics is in fact correct. Okay, so anyways, right. So let's look at another manifestation of this zero-point energy. Because zero-point energy, and I'm sort of focusing on this, is and stressing it and emphasizing it, is because zero-point energy is one of the most important facts about our universe that we discovered when we started to understand the quantum nature of the universe. It has really, really deep and profound ramifications for just the nature of the way things are. So let's look at zero-point energy a bit more closely. Okay, so in the context of this ball rolling back and forth in this bowl here. Okay, so if we give that ball some energy, it will oscillate back and forth between, say, an amplitude of vibration of plus A and minus A. The projection on the x-axis just goes back and forth. Okay, so classically, in a Newtonian universe, we know that the energy is related to the amplitude how? What did we have last time? Yeah. Right. So the energy is 1/2 kA squared. So if you're looking at that thing and you're seeing that it's oscillating with an amplitude of, say, you know, half a meter, you plug in half a meter here, multiply by k, et cetera, and you get the energy, the total energy. Okay, so the first question, I guess, or the relevant question here is, what is the minimum? What is the minimum energy? Zero. And that occurs when A is what? Okay. So in a classical universe described by Newton, it's possible for this thing to have zero energy, that occurs when the amplitude is zero. So there's no vibration, there's no oscillation. It's just sitting there at the bottom of the bowl. Okay, so, but in the quantum world, things are more interesting. Okay, so in the quantum world, let's look at how it is that this doesn't make any sense. In the quantum world, suppose we had A equals zero. Amplitude of vibration was just zero, so it's just sitting there. What is X? What is delta X? So delta X is zero. Not because x is 0. X could be, as long as x is some definite value, and we know for sure x has that definite value, then our uncertainty in its position is just 0. We know that it's definitely 0. So delta x is 0. Okay, so what is the uncertainty in the momentum? What is Heisenberg's uncertainty principle? What does Heisenberg's uncertainty principle tell me about delta P? How is it related to delta X? What am I going to write here? H over 4 pi delta X. So we wrote down the Heisenberg uncertainty principle as delta X times delta P is greater than or equal to H over 4 pi. I take the delta X down here, and I get this. Okay. But if delta X is 0, what is delta P? Okay, so this is just infinite. Okay, so what that means is if, for some reason, if you could magically have it in that sort of state, then it would just sort of instantly jump into motion, spring into motion, okay? And it would get some random momentum, and it would just leave that location, and it would start like jiggling around. It would sort of kick itself into motion, okay? And so that tells us that A is not zero. It would then get some amplitude of vibration. So if you start with A equals zero, Heisenberg and Cerny says, well, no, you can't have that. A has to be non-zero. Okay, so in the quantum world, there has to be some kind of motion involved. Okay, so the goal of today is to figure out, or one of the goals is to figure out exactly how much energy is required. What is the minimum energy in a quantum universe? Okay, so let's start with the classical expression for energy. Energy is kinetic plus potential. The kinetic is 1/2 mv squared, which is the same as p squared over 2m, plus okay, so there's a kinetic term and a potential term. Okay, so this is okay. So now what we're going to do is we're going to try to make some sense of what is sort of happening. What we know is that the particle is not on some, at least according to the what's called the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics, the particle is not on some definite trajectory. Okay, it's not as if it's like it's not as if when it has this minimum zero point energy, it's somehow oscillating smoothly back and forth between some definite plus A and minus A. It's doing some weird quantum thing, okay, which we can't describe classically, which we can't wrap our minds around. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to imagine while the particle is doing this weird jiggly thing, whatever it is, we're going to take multiple snapshots. Okay, we're going to measure the position of that particle at different times. Okay, and what we're going to imagine, actually, to be technically correct, we're going to imagine that we have a whole bunch of copies of this system, all in the ground state. Okay. And then what we're going to do is take a snapshot of this system, and we're going to say, you know, where is its position? And then we're going to take a snapshot of this system, and where is its position? And so we're going to find its position in different. We're going to find different position values. Okay. And similarly, we're going to measure momentum at different times. Take different snapshots and measure the momentum, and so on. Okay. And so, and then we're going to average. We're going to average these quantities. So what we're looking for is sort of roughly a time average. So we're going to take many snapshots. And we're going to average over what we see. Okay, so by average, I'm going to use this notation. I'm going to put something that I want to average, I want to, you know, over time by taking these snapshots, I will put that quantity in those angle kind of brackets. Okay, so I want to find the average value of the energy, so that means the average value of the square of the momentum divided by 2m plus 1/2 k times the average value of x squared. Okay, so what we need to do is try to make some sense of what this thing means, average value of x squared and average value of p squared. Okay, so the way to think about this is we're going to look at these various snapshots. Okay, so here's the x-axis, and there is zero. Okay, and this this ball inside this bowl is doing this weird sort of quantum-y kind of a thing. I take a snapshot, and you know, once I find the ball is over there, another time I find it's over there, and so on and so forth. So maybe the first snapshot it's over there. Second snapshot, it's over there. Third one, it's over there. Fourth one, there, and so on and so forth. Okay, and then I average. Okay, suppose I take the average value of the those position values. What am I going to get? Zero. I'm going to get zero because the bowl is symmetric. Okay, it's equally likely to be on the left as on the right. Okay, so I'll just get zero. Okay, but that's not what this thing is asking for. It's not asking for the average value of x. It's asking for the average value of x squared. Okay, so let's see. So what that means is something like this. This is x squared. Okay, so maybe the first value is this. So I square that value and I put it there. The next value is this. Well, I square that value and it's over there. Next value is this. It's negative. But when I square it, it becomes positive. It's over there. And so on. So I take all those values, square them. They're all positive, so they all lie to the right of 0. And so now when I take the average value of this, it's going to lie somewhere here. It's going to be non-zero. The average value of x squared is not 0. Okay, and that's the thing that I want to stick inside here. Okay, so so let me just say this. The average value of x squared is equal to delta x squared. Okay, so there's, I guess, two ways to think about this. One is, this is, we need some way of precisely defining what we mean by the uncertainty in the position. So when a particle, or when this thing is in some state, and the state that we're interested in is this E0 state, so we're saying it's in this E0 state, we know that its wave function looks something like this. Okay, this is its probability pattern. Looks something like this. Okay, so it's likely to be found near the bottom of the bowl, less and less likely to be found further away from the bottom of the bowl. Okay. And so as we see this particle, as we take various measurements of this particle, we will get some kind of a feel for the spread here. Okay. If we find, like, lots of values way out here, well, that means the spread is large. If we find, values only very near the origin, then we know that the spread is very small. Okay, so by making a measurement of the average value of x squared, we can get a sense of the spread of this probability curve. Okay. And the spread of that probability curve is, by definition, the uncertainty, or uncertainty in the position. Because when the particle is in this state, we don't know exactly where it is. We know it's roughly between here and here. It's highly unlikely to be found out here. It's roughly in this region here. Okay. And so our uncertainty, so when we describe where is the particle, well, we would say the particle is at location 0 plus or minus some uncertainty. And the uncertainty, the plus or minus the uncertainty is this width over here. Okay, so delta x, that uncertainty, measures sort of the width of this crazy 0-point vibration. Okay, and so we need a precise way of defining this. And it turns out that in quantum mechanics, this is the definition of delta x squared. The uncertainty in x squared is defined to be the average value of x squared. Okay? So that should make some intuitive sense, I hope. Okay, and what we're going to try to do is relate that to something sort of more concrete, which is the size of the amplitude of the oscillation. Okay, so suppose that this particle has this weird kind of 0-point motion near the bottom of the bowl. Okay, so it's jiggling back and forth like this. It's very rarely way out here. It's basically around here. Okay, so this is a rough kind of idea. And so the rough idea is I'm going to put two points here and say, well, roughly it's between x equals minus a and x equals plus a. And I would say that a then is the size of the system, the size that system occupies. Okay, if the 0-point energy is really large, that means it's going like crazy. Okay, tons of like this random kind of motion. In which case, the size of the system, you would say, is bigger. Okay, the electron, the particle, is occupying a bigger space. Okay, if the 0-point energy is very, very small, then it's just sort of sitting there very near x equals 0 all the time, and you would say that the size of the system is small. So A is sort of like the size of our system. Okay, and so clearly, A is basically the same thing as delta x. So delta x squared, we're going to call A squared. The size of our system when it's in this weird 0-point motion, when it has this weird sort of quantum fuzziness. Okay, so that takes care of this guy. What about this guy over here? So this is, we want the average value of p squared. Okay, so similarly, this is our p, and this is p equals 0. Okay, so it's doing this weird sort of thing. And at one instant of time, we measure it, and we find, oh, it's moving to the right. And so its momentum is positive, and it has that magnitude right there. Okay. The next time we measure it, oh, it's moving to the right again. But maybe it's moving faster, so it's over there. Okay, the next time we measure it, we find, oh, it's moving actually to the left, you know, with, say, this much magnitude of momentum, and so on. And so we take a whole bunch of measurements like this, and we average those values. What is the average value of p? Zero again, because it's equally likely to be found moving to the right as to the left. Okay, but again, we're not interested in the average value of p. We're interested in the average value of p squared. Okay, so we take all of these points here, and we square them all. So now this is p squared. All of them are going to be 0 or bigger. And so we get a whole bunch of points like this. And then the average value is over here. Okay, it's non-zero. Okay, so again, for the same reason as up there, the average value of p squared is by definition what we mean by the uncertainty in p squared. This is true when the average value is zero. The formula is slightly more complicated when the average value is not zero. Okay. And so what is this? What is delta p squared? Think Heisenberg uncertainty. What is delta p according to the Heisenberg uncertainty? Thank you. So greater than or equal to delta p is greater than or equal to h over 4 pi delta x. But we want delta p squared, so we square both sides. Or we square the right-hand side. Okay. So here we have a 1 over delta x squared. But we already know what delta x squared is. It's a squared. Okay. So this is the same as h over 4 pi a squared. Okay? So now we say, now we have an expression for average value of x squared, average value of p squared in terms of a, in terms of the size of this fuzzy system. Okay, now we're going to plug those in to this equation here and see what happens. Okay, so what we get is the expected value of e, we take that p squared, divide by 2m. So we just take that thing and divide by 2m. So what are we going to get? We're going to get h squared. What am I going to get? What is that thing squared divided by 2m? H squared over 4 times 4 is 16, times 2 is 32, pi squared. And there's going to be an m. And there's going to, so that's a constant out front. And then there's a 1 over a squared. And then I go 1 half kx squared. So that's plus 1 half k, some constant, times the value of x squared, the average value of x squared, which is just a squared. Okay? So that's good. So it's saying that if I take many, many measurements and I average over those, I will find that there are two terms contributing to the total energy of that system, of that ball. And one of those terms is this guy. This is just classical. This is a classical, and it's a potential energy term. Okay? So if this term were not here and we had only this term, how could we minimize the energy? What is the minimum value of the energy? 0 when the system size A is equal to 0. So classically, to find the minimum energy of the system, well, that's simply A equal to 0. The thing is just sitting at the bottom, doing nothing. Okay. Now, there's a term here that is added to this. This term is extremely important. Okay. First of all, it's purely quantum. It does not exist in Newton's universe because it involves H. If in Newton's universe, there is no such thing as Planck's constant. That thing is just simply not present. And all we have is this. Okay? But as soon as we have a non-zero Planck's constant, it doesn't matter what that Planck's constant is, as soon as it's non-zero, this term appears. And it's very different from this term. This is an a squared. This is a 1 over a squared. And this is also a kinetic energy type of term. Okay? Kinetic energy in the sense that where does it come from? It comes from the p squared. P squared over 2m is kinetic energy. And the momentum that we're talking about here is this random kind of weird zero-point motion kind of momentum. Okay, so it's a purely quantum mechanical construct. It exists only because particles are claustrophobic. Okay, in this relationship here, the smaller we make the size of the system here, okay, the larger the uncertainty momentum, the more sort of this random purely quantum mechanical motion it has. And that random purely quantum mechanical motion is associated with the kinetic energy, and there it is. That's the magnitude of the kinetic energy. It depends upon Planck's constant. Okay, so let's make a graph now of this. So let's plot that as a function of A. So we will think of here the energy. Oh, yeah.
The average when he's supposed to square A constant change
of. Are you? Do you want this guy or this guy? This one? Yeah.
Oh. In that equation,
oh, I see.
Four,
yeah.
H divided by 4 pi delta x. Delta x is equal to a squared.
Ah, delta x is equal to a. Because delta x all squared is a squared. So delta x is a. So here I just put the A in there.
A.
Yeah, delta x is A. Okay, so we're going to think of this energy here as a function of the size of the system, as a function of this quantum fuzziness, the size of this quantum, the range of this quantum fuzziness, the size of our system. And we're going to ask, for what value is this energy minimum? For what value of the size of the system is the energy minimum? Okay, so what we need to do is plot that function of A. Okay, so this is energy on the vertical axis, and this is the size of our system on the horizontal axis, and that's 0, 0. Okay, so let's first plot the classical term. The classical term is 1 half to some constant times a squared, so it's a quadratic. So it starts at 0 when a is 0, and it grows quadratically. It goes up like that. Okay, so this is the classical potential energy term, 1 half k a squared. Okay? If that's all that there was to it, if we didn't have this term over here, we would just look at this graph immediately and say, oh, well, the minimum energy occurs here at a equals 0, and we're done. But now there's this additional term, and this additional term is very different. This thing grows as A gets bigger. What does this thing do as A gets bigger? It gets smaller because it's 1 over A squared. What happens to this term as A gets really, really small? It gets closer and closer to infinity. It just grows bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's like this curve, but the reverse. Okay, so for large values of A, it's small. But as A gets smaller and smaller and smaller, it grows up. Bigger and bigger and bigger, it just goes off to infinity. Just like this guy goes off to infinity, the big and big. For small enough a, this one that goes off to infinity. So this is a purely quantum kinetic energy, and that's the h, well, it's whatever, some constant times 1 over a squared. It's the 1 over a squared term. Okay? And so the energy here is the sum of those two. So we need to write down the sum of those two. And I know we have colored chalk. Colored chalk would be so nice. Where? A whole box of colored chalk! Okay. So let's add these guys up. So to add two curves, let's pick a point on the A axis. The value of this curve is that. The value of this curve is that. So we just double that. So we're up there. Okay, to add, say, at this point, we take this value of the curve and add it to that value. Okay, so we go up like that. And at this point over here, we take that value of the curve and we add that little bit, and so on. Okay, so you can do the same thing over here and connect the dots. And what you get is the curve is this. Okay? So, So you'll notice, first of all, for large values of A, okay, so large values of A happen in the classical world. In the classical world, we're talking about a bowl that's this big and this thing is going back and forth. We're talking about this is 1 meter. Okay? So we're way, way out over here. You notice that the actual energy, the yellow curve, almost exactly matches just the classical energy. And there's no difference. But as A gets smaller and smaller and smaller, till this guy becomes of quantum dimensions, like atomic dimensions, then we start noticing that this curve departs from the classical, okay, and it bends upwards like this. Instead of the minimum occurring at zero, when A is zero, the minimum shifts over to here. The minimum is now here. The minimum occurs not at A equals zero, but at some other some finite value of A we'll call A zero. Okay? And the energy at A zero is some value which we'll call E zero. That's going to be our 0 point energy. Okay? So what we notice is that the size of the system, to minimize the energy, the size of the system is no longer zero. The minimum energy occurs at some non-zero value for the size of the system, and that's this particle doing this weird sort of quantum fuzzy motion. Okay? So what's important is there's this purely quantum mechanical kinetic energy term, which becomes important when the size of the system becomes small, when A becomes small. Then this curve totally dominates. Okay, this curve becomes irrelevant. The classical one becomes irrelevant. The purely quantum mechanical kinetic energy dominates. And it takes this classical curve and it pulls it up to this. Instead of going to zero, it in fact goes to infinity. Okay, a huge qualitative difference. It shifts that zero from there to there, and the energy is now non-zero. Okay? So how do you think we could calculate this A0 and this E0? Calculus. Okay. All right, so let's actually do that just quickly here. So for those of you who don't know calculus, don't worry, we'll just spend 5 minutes on this.